It takes a village to raise a child. We all know that, right? But what happens if you can't find your village? Because raising your child is really, really tough. What if you were so filled with shame and doubt and guilt and fear of judgment that you don't share your triumphs and your struggles? You don't talk about it because you don't think anyone can possibly relate. Well, I've been there, and it was really hard for me to find my tribe. So I decided to make mine. I went out and found these amazing mothers who are also in the trenches, struggling to raise their kids. Together, we are a community. And in this podcast, On the Hard Days, you'll find motivating stories from other real moms who get it. We're going to accept who we are and how we show up for our children each and every day, even on the hard days.
Hey, if you're a mom of a neurodivergent child and you're struggling, I need you to check out my free virtual open house event coming up soon. What do I mean by struggling? If you feel a deep sense of loneliness, shame, guilt, overwhelm, doubt, and/or burnout, you're struggling. I know, because this was me for years. Mothers Together is my membership community for moms just like you, where I cultivate a small group of women with the same challenges and the same desire for connection, friendship, and to feel like themselves again. In our pod squads, moms quickly realize that simply speaking their truths and being validated without fear of judgment changes the way they feel not only about their neurodivergent kids and their family, but themselves. Feeling like you belong is the number one way to feel better about yourself. And over the last 2.5 years, hundreds of mothers have experienced this shift and honestly improved their mental health. Mothers Together has now moved to a quarterly model, and our doors open again right after the 1st of January, April, July, and October. But how do you know if you're ready? How do you know if this is what you need? So come to my virtual open house and find out. I'll put you in touch with other moms, and for some of you, this may be the very first time you'll have spoken to someone else in the same position as you. Facilitate positive connections and meaningful conversations, and basically just invite you to have a look around our virtual Mothers Together home. Now, this open house is free because I want it to be accessible to all struggling moms of neurodivergent kids. However, I will ask for a $5 donation to the Mothers Together Scholarship Fund if you're able to do that, which supports moms who are financially unable to join Mothers Together but need the community. There's so much more I could share about open house and Mothers Together, but let's get right to the point. You need to be on my open house email list, which is how I will be sharing information about it as it gets closer. I'm going to give you the website to enter your email. Are you ready? Okay. It's mothers-together.com/open house. That's mothers-together.com/open house. Open House and Mothers Together allows you, mom, to finally climb in the wagon and let someone else pull. To set your heavy bags down that you've been carrying for so long. And as you begin to heal, you'll find inner strength that you didn't know you had to show the same love to other struggling moms. So get on the email list, my friends. I can't wait to meet you at Open House. So welcome back, everybody. I am so glad that you are here listening today. And my guest is Chantel Stegan. Did I say that mostly correct?
Yes, you did.
Yes, good job. I wrote it down. Thank you. And Chantel has been so supportive of me. I was saying before, I just feel like I've talked to you a lot through Instagram and it kind of feels like I already know you. So welcome to the show, first of all.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
I'm very excited to have this conversation. Yeah, me too. I think, you know, I feel like it's been a long time coming. So why don't we start from the beginning? Just introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about your family.
Sure. Okay. So I'm Chantel. I'm Australian, but I live in Germany, which comes with its own hurdles. The biggest hurdle being, and I was listening to one of your podcast episodes yesterday, actually, and I found myself in the kitchen listening, nodding the whole time. It was about building community. And I said, yeah, the biggest downfall we have over here is not having any community. So I'll come back to that because I think that's the most important point for me. So we've got two boys. One's nearly 6, one's nearly 11. The first one has ADHD, SPD, and dyslexia. So he got the package on issues. It all started with eating disorders. He stopped eating everything at the age of one, except for breast milk and bread rolls. That was the only white bread rolls, no grains. And I thought, this isn't normal. You know, it's just not normal. So I went to a doctor and she said, he's not thin. I said, no, he's not thin because I'm still breastfeeding him. But if I stop that, my child will turn into a skeleton and, you know, things aren't going to go very well here. And then I found, you know, just trying to get anyone to listen to me and believe me that something's not right was difficult. So we changed pediatrician, and then I got a really good one. Then we went to an eating institute where they're meant to be specialized in this particular field. And they wrote in the report, the mother is also a picky eater and he'll grow out of it. Because in our interview, I said, oh, yeah, I'm not a big fan of greens. But plenty of people aren't a big fan of greens. That doesn't make me picky too. So I was like, okay. In the end, we did 3 years of what will you call it? Occupational therapy, did nothing. And then, you know, in the end, a friend sent me an internet article and it said something with S sensory processing disorder. I said, oh, what's that? So I clicked on it, came to another page, read that. Oh, well, this sounds a lot like our child. And then I clicked on another link and then there was a red flag list. And I was like, yep. The whole list basically described my son perfectly. I'm like, right. That was the first step. So we figured out that he had SPD. Eventually, we came to diagnostics and got him to ADHD for that. Neurologist, no, that was a no-go. Another psychiatrist, no. In the end, I said, you know, I said he has dyslexia. And this, of course, is all happening in my second language, Germany. I'm trying to do all this in my second language. And she went over to her computer and she Googled dyslexia. I am not kidding. And the printout was in German and she showed me. And the first line said, dyslexia in English has a different meaning to the German terms and blah. And she didn't believe me. I went, sit with him for 5 minutes and try to read, you know? So you're up against all these hurdles. I was up against all these hurdles with a second language. In the end, changed psychiatrist again, found a really great one. She believed me, did all the diagnostics I wanted her to do. We ended up getting a school aid for my son, and everything then sort of went smoothly. But getting that first professional to believe you was the hard part. And, you know, as you know yourself, I've heard it in many of your, especially your Instagram videos, I'm trying even to get your family to believe you, friends to believe you, neighbors to believe you, anyone who even sees them have their meltdowns. You know, no, you're just a bad parent. No. And then you're up against these professionals who are meant to understand this to its core. You know, they're brain scientists. How do you not get it? How do you not believe me? You know, so that was the long story short for my first. My second son also has, well, he's had quite an ordeal with anxiety. I did not know that 3-year-olds could kind of have panic attacks until I saw it happen. Coronavirus did not help this. He just got settled in kindergarten, and when kindergarten reopened, couldn't go in. He had major meltdowns and panic attacks, and he would hold the fence and cry and scream, like, I can't do this, mummy. It's like, well, all right, well, I'm not going to force you. So that was the first thing with him. Eating issues came later, and I thought, oh, you're copying your brother. I'm not so sure if this is real or not, but no, it is. He doesn't like changes. He doesn't, I mean, you can't even change his bed around. He doesn't like his sheets changed, just little everyday things. He's not really good with that. And in the end, I said, okay, well, his sibling has the packet on issues. Let's get him diagnosed as well. Let's just do the diagnostics and see. And he also has ADHD, but a completely different version. So my eldest is the explosive type that we so often come across, slamming doors, spitting, kicking, punching, throwing, the works. And the second one is sort of the typical, very slow, very distracted. You know, he'll be on his way out the door. Oh, look, a stick. You know, but like a dog, oh, ball. So that comes with different challenges. He's generally easier. He has a lot of friends. He is socially very simple and very integrated. So that's one part I don't have with him. The first one, of course, you know, we realized at the age of about 8 that he'd never been invited to a birthday party. I was like, oh. And we only realized because the 3-year-old got an invitation. It's like, oh, how do we deal with this? So, you know, big jealous, teary tantrum because, you know, hang on a second, I've never been invited to a birthday party. This is not cool. I have no friends. You know, and at that age to start to notice is a bit hard. So yeah, so that's the kids. But when I said I wanted to come back to community, I said we live here in Germany. I of course have no family, no friends. Or when I came here at least, I've had friends that have come and gone, But stable, you know, those kind of friends you make in your early working years or in your school years, we don't have them. My husband is German, but not born here. So his parents are also a couple of hours away. And in any case, they're kind of elderly these days. They can't really do much for us. So apart from the disappointment of, you know, they don't believe us to the first part as being a hard part, there can't be any practical help, even if they could or would, you know. So we're very alone in it. And I've got to say, your page, Megan, has been an absolute lifesaver. It's the one thing I do. I check Instagram every day to see what your reel is. I'm a bit of a, oh, well, I'm a big fan. And so I've been seeing a psychiatrist for, no, psychologist, there is a difference. I've seen a psychologist for 6 years because I wasn't coping with our kids. And I actually said to her in our last appointment, oh, I found this woman on Instagram. You won't believe it. Life-changing stuff. I have an internet page full of thousands of people I don't know who get it, who live it, who feel it. You know, they have the same desperation and worries, and I don't feel alone anymore. And I've got to say, so thank you very much for offering the platform. Yeah, I'm going to get emotional in a minute. Because I mean, I've had a decade of this. You know, people who don't believe me, don't support me, don't understand, don't, even if they try to, they just can't. And then all of a sudden, I've got this page of thousands of other mums who just get it. You don't even have to explain yourself. It doesn't matter what you post, and yeah, we're all in the same boat together. It's nice.
Oh my gosh. Oh my goodness. That was really kind. Thank you.
It's
Really
true.
kind. I really appreciate it. I don't even know what to say because it's the same. The feeling that you just gave me is the feeling that I'm trying to give you and everybody else. And it's the same. I don't understand why there aren't more people talking about it. I guess it's hard to talk about, but I was desperate to find other moms like me, and I know exactly the way that you felt. And anyway, it's so kind, and I'm so glad that you're here. And like I said, we do feel like internet friends, and you're always so supportive. And the thing is that it finding other people who are going through what you are changes everything. It's
Absolutely.
crucial. It is so crucial. And so for you, when you're telling your story, and there's so many pieces that I want to talk about, but there's a lot of
Lots.
pieces to that puzzle. But one of them is that you're alone. And
Yes.
that is another layer of hardship. You're not in your home country. It's not your native language. It's and I don't know if the it, do you feel like different countries are different in the way that they approach neurodivergence, like I don't know,
Yes,
Germany.
absolutely. In fact, when I started Googling SPD and getting all my information, I was doing my Googling in English anyway. But I had this impression that America, above all places, is so far ahead in the understanding of this, especially sensory processing disorder. I ordered a few books online through Amazon because, you know, you can find everything. Does it's not language specific. Forget a bookshop here, you know. And that was really helpful in the beginning. And I just felt like, you know, and there's all these people saying, oh, they're having this appointment, and doing this and doing that. I'm like, well, no one, well, actually, I've got to backtrack. I don't know anyone here with a neurodivergent child. In our friendship circle, they all seem to function, or if they're not, they're not talking about it. So I had to go to the internet. You know, there was nothing else for me. And I found that America was really ahead. And then we did this 3 years of occupational therapy twice a week. It was an hour of driving for me twice a week just to do this. And I found a place that was specialized for SPD and did nothing. I was like, yeah, well, that wasn't anything. But at least it was offered, covered by German health insurance. All right, it was worth a shot. In the end, we did retained primitive reflex therapy. That was amazing. Huge changes. That comes under, oh, the bad translation would be hippie medicine here. It's not covered by, you know, it's like in this holistic kind of, you know, ooh, we don't know if it works. Medicine, because we had to pay for that ourselves. Best money ever spent. And that did something. But coming to people and professionals who understood the problem was really hard. You know, and before it, I would be planning in my head before my appointments what I've got to say, because not my language, and I'd be looking up words that I want to say. I'm like, okay, because I've got all my knowledge in English, I've got to convey this to someone in another language. And then Yeah, I don't know, to feel like you're being taken seriously is hard. You know, to stand your ground and express yourself in a second language is very difficult. And I did all this by myself, you know, so husband had to work and I spend all my days going to appointments and going to here and there and whatever and trying to explain this. So that was really hard. And I felt, I mean, there are support services here, but they're very hard to find when it's not your first language. I mean, you don't even know what to Google, you know, you've got to figure out what it's called first. So that was a really big challenge in the beginning. We did end up getting my son a school aide, which was very, very helpful. That made an enormous difference. But even that, I mean, Germany's known for its bureaucracy, and it's true. A lot of forms, a lot of paperwork, a lot of appointments, a lot of phone calls. But that paid off in the end. And he doesn't have one anymore. We changed schools, and he's doing great. So that all worked out.
I can't even imagine not knowing the language and trying to like Google words. Oh, that's so stressful. That is really
Yep. Although
stressful.
I'm an expert in it now,
I
ask me anything in German, I can explain neurodivergent conditions really well.
Oh my
But it was a
gosh.
steep learning curve because I had to try and understand it myself first. You know,
Right.
as we're all trying to understand our kids and like, okay, my kid is a little bit different, but oh, am I overreacting? Am I not seeing it right? And then, you know, you can Google a headache and 2 seconds later you think you're going to die, you know, so Googling is generally a bad idea.
Yes.
But I had no choice because I had no other avenues. And so I was part of a mummy's group when my eldest was born. And there were 10 of us, no, 12 of us from different countries. And English was our primary core language where we all communicated. And so between us, I think we've probably got, I'd say we've probably got about 28 kids. And I've got the only two with issues. And it's like, really? Really? Not one other? Cannot just one other have something so I feel like we have something to bond over, talk about here? And then I would feel really like a hindrance when we'd meet and, you know, how are you going? Do you want an honest answer or do you want me to lie and make you feel better? Because I didn't feel, I mean, I talked about all these issues in the beginning and at some point I thought, I don't really feel like I can be honest with you guys. I'm going to drag the mood down. We don't get together that often and who wants to talk about my kids? And no one understood. And they couldn't understand, and it made it hard. We also had a couple of neighbors here who we were kind of getting really friendly with. And then our elders had a meltdown once, and you could see in their eyes they were so visibly uncomfortable. And then we kind of, you know, wound it up and said, okay, bye, thanks for coming. And that was it. We never made another social date again. So what we do instead is my husband will go over and just have a beer every now and then with the dad. And that's it, because it was just a no-go, and it's not going to work. They don't get it, they can't get it, so it's over, you know, so that sucks.
It does suck, and it really does. And I, you must have felt so lonely for a long time between the
Yes.
doctors, being in a different country, nobody has a classmate, nobody, the friends, the neighbors, like completely alone, and
Yep.
yet you're still hanging in.
Yeah, got no choice. It's a job we can't quit, right?
Oh, that's right.
Stuck in it. No, but I would take to having chats with the postman, you know. The postman would know, well, you know, would you like a drink of water? It's a hot day. And then, you know, talk to him for a few minutes. I'm like, all right. Because my littlest, when he was little, I never really understood that this happened, but it does. There are kids who don't like car seats and prams. And so I was housebound too. He would scream blue murder if I put him in a pram. So I had him in a carrier and that was okay. But I was generally also housebound with these problems. So no family, no friends, no one to give a kid to even for 10 minutes of breathing space. A kid who won't leave the house. So I couldn't even get to a playgroup. And then the people I could get to, so the neighbors and whatever, like just, yeah, no, no avenue for an outlet here. So, I mean, I've adjusted to it, of course. We're talking a long time here. But even still, when I'm this long down the road and I'm used to being by myself, I'm used to doing the appointments by myself, it's fine. Still finding your page was this breath of fresh air. I'm like, wow, this is awesome. I can be myself here. I don't have to pretend. I don't have to play nice. I don't have to smile. I don't have to lie and say everything's fine. It's not fine. You know, I got punched 3 times before breakfast. How was your day? You know? No. So I've still got humor. Hallelujah. It's either laugh or cry, right? So I'm going with laughter.
Yeah,
Yeah.
relate so relatable.
Yeah.
Very relatable. A couple things to go back to. One is the
Yes, go for it.
primitive reflex Tell me about
therapy.
that therapy. What was that?
Oh, this is amazing. And not very known about, at least not here. So babies are born the first year with reflexes. We all know that. You know, you lie down, you're sleeping, baby, and their arms fly out and they're awake. And you go, ooh, what did I do wrong? No, that's a reflex. They tend to shut off after a year and the brain takes over. With some children, they don't shut off. So the brain doesn't take over and the body is still very much in reflex mode. And there are several. There's a crossing the midline reflex where your sides are separate and they need to integrate at some point. Now, if they're not integrated, consider dressing. You've got to cross that midline all the time. You put a sleeve in one hand, you've got to cross over the body with the other hand. To tie your shoelaces, you've got to cross that line to get to your foot. You're crossing it all the time. To pass things to someone, you're crossing it. And so your body is saying, no, you're not going over that side. We're the right side. We're not going to the left. Stop it. What are you doing? And your brain is saying, well, come on now. We've got to get dressed. Get to it. And your hand's like, no. Your brain's like, yes. Your hand's like, no. Your brain's yes. And so you're in this eternal fight with yourself. And so what happens is you tend to push yourself and your brain wins and it pushes that hand over and it helps you get dressed. But you're already in a massive state of frustration because you're fighting your own body. So these reflexes really get in the way. There's also one where the direction of your head and your hand are connected. So your hand and your head will move sort of in synchronization with each other, synchronization. And the right side is irrelevant. So the problem when this reflex remains is riding a bike. You look at a tree on the left, you're going to drive left. You're going to steer right. You're going to be all over the place. So my son could not ride a bike straight to save himself. I can't count how many times he nearly took me off my bike. And then once the reflex is closed off, they do this through exercise. Can ride a bike straight. Now he rides without his hands on the handlebars, which stresses me out. I'm like, put your hands on the handlebars when you're riding with me, son. But it's amazing the difference. And you know, the outbursts for the first reflex were a lot less. They were extreme with the second reflex we worked on. But the therapist said, no, well, that's good because that's how you know it's working. They have to, you know, go nuts at that one. And so yeah, that was amazing. Even swimming, he could swim with his head down. Some parents will probably be nodding when they listen to this. As soon as the head goes up, the arms go out, they flail about and they can't swim. There's also a neck reflex, which is responsible for that. So as soon as the head goes up, they can't swim. So all this stuff can all be alleviated through exercises. It's just not known about. So there are places that are slow the game. I have recommended my therapist lady to so many people here because hands down the best money we ever spent. Yeah, great. Just different kid after.
Wow. My son also had the crossing the midline problem, and I had never heard of that. I didn't know the word vestibular. I didn't know anything. But he never crawled. Nothing, no scoot, no slide. He just stood up and screamed his head off, and he couldn't. And I'll never forget, we had somebody come to our house to evaluate my son for autism. And one of the things that she did while she was there, because of the vestibular crossing the midline thing, was she sat both of my twins down on this little bench, not high up, it was low to the ground. And she said, okay, I'm going to gently push your child over. And it was not dangerous. And she pushed over my daughter. And as my daughter went backwards, she instinctively put her hand out and she said, now watch what happens when we do it with your son. And she pushed him backwards and he just boom went back. It was crazy. And I've
It
never
is
heard of
crazy.
such a thing. Yes.
And even like the diagnosis for this, the diagnostic exercises, it's just like, you know, crawl across the floor like you're a crocodile. And she watches how the arms and legs are coordinated. Stand on one leg, close your eyes, tilt your head up. Very basic things. For the kid, the assessment is actually kind of fun. And all of a sudden, you see things differently. Like, you know, my untrained eyes would never, ever notice that. And then I realized thinking back, yeah, my son never went on a slide, never went on a swing. Playgrounds were nothing for him. He would dig in the sand and that's it. And we couldn't touch his feet. Oh, how old was he? Maybe until he was 8. Used to cut his toenails in the dark with a pillow over my head, torch in my mouth with clippers. This is the only way, you know. Yeah, no, the kid is not going to let you touch his feet. And now he loves foot rubs. The therapy changed that too, I've got to say. Now it's his favorite thing for going to sleep. Oh, can you rub my feet? Yeah, I can.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's amazing.
I wonder what that therapist thinks about, like, you're talking about German, like there doesn't seem to be a lot of help, but
No,
that
well,
therapist is there.
yeah, that's true, but it's not well known. I've told so many people that, oh, what's that?
Oh boy.
But then you would probably know it yourself. There's so much stuff you have to figure out. It's like going to college to learn, or to get a college degree or something in a subject you've got no idea about. You've got no tutor, you've got no professor. There's no one to ask. You're just learning remotely by yourself. And then in the end, you've got this bucket load of knowledge that you're just desperate to share with people. Like, oh, I found the answer. I found something that works. And I mean, we have a swing, for example, now in our living room. Best thing ever as well. In fact, the kids only fight about who gets to go in it and who has to get out. But otherwise, in general, best decision ever. And I was like, well, why not have a swing in your living room? Then I think back, my kid wouldn't go on a swing to save himself until he was six or so. Swing, no way. That was just his absolute version of horror to go on a swing. And now we can't get enough of it. So I mean, these things do change, and in
They
hindsight
do.
is interesting.
Yeah, and therapy, I guess, helps with that too. The other thing I wanted to mention from before, when you said that your older son s basically stopped eating, the eating disorder at 1 year old, like one, and that is so crazy. There are a lot of people who go through this, and yet there's no. I've never read anything about articles or books or things about what happens when your baby refuses food. I mean, that's terrifying.
It's extreme. I mean,
Yes.
I used to make up these little, what would you call them, vegetable purees, and I'd cut up, and I was like, I'm going to be one, if we all dream, I'm going to be one of those mothers who cuts off carrot sticks for my child. McDonald's is not going to exist. Ha ha ha. We're all dreamers once. So he would eat all this stuff, all these purees, no problem. And then all of a sudden, he just stopped. He just stopped flat out. Would not touch another thing. I was like, that's weird. I thought, okay, maybe he's not well or something, and it got to a week and another week and another week. I'm like, okay, this is not right. But as I said, I was breastfeeding him, so he didn't lose any weight. He was fine, but of course he was on the boob way more often, because he's not getting anything. And then white bread, that went forever. I couldn't even get a slightly different type. It couldn't look different. This was insane. And then I think he was about two when he finally ate, what would we call that? Like a pretzel bread roll, one of these ones that are dark on the outside. And I was like, oh my God, my baby tried something else, nearly crying. But the most extreme thing about this was it was so very clearly not a choice, because plenty of people will tell you, oh, you're being too soft, be harder, firmer, stricter. No child chooses to refuse food. Something's going on. And then, he would see these other kids eating strawberries and he would gag. He would literally stand there nearly like convulsing and dry reaching. I'm like, oh my God, is he gonna vomit? Just because he was looking at a kid eat a strawberry. And then the same thing happened with my sister. She didn't believe me. And then we were in Australia for a holiday and she had a tomato plant in her garden, picked a tomato, ate it, and then he started, convulsing next to it, like, I'm gonna vomit. And she's like, oh wow. I mean, you told me, but I didn't believe it. And now I've seen it. Like, I believe you now. Okay, we're good. And I said, yeah, you can't make this stuff up. And then we had that when he was in kindergarten. They did, so they used to eat in kindergarten, and the kids had, I guess it was like a vanilla pudding or something for dessert. And he actually did go and throw up, not because he tried it, because he saw all the other kids eating it and he thought that was disgusting. So then you realize you put it all together, the sight, the smell, the look of it, the texture, it's just too much. This is where the sensory processing came in, and this is where I could figure out, oh, that's what he has, because here's the symptom list. And yeah, with food and so on, it is. But in fact, I've got to talk about this because this is a hard one. There are eight senses, and the one that affects my son the most, and this is the hardest one to deal with, I would say, are the inner signals. He doesn't feel hunger or thirst, the need for the loo, or temperature. So if he's cold, he's going to have a meltdown. He doesn't know it. If he's hot, he doesn't do well in summer. He's going to have a meltdown. He doesn't know it. After ice cream, he always has a meltdown. And we figured out, oh, why? After ice cream, you're always thirsty. He's thirsty. He doesn't know it. And this is a kind of sense, like, with the vestibular and the proprioception, you can sort of train some things with textures. You can try to desensitize it. You can try things at least. But you can't train the body to send a signal, right? You're stuck with that one. And then, of course, he's nearly 11. He's sick of being told when to eat, to have a drink, to please go to the toilet. And I mean, his tone of voice tells me absolutely what he needs. I'm like, oh, that pitch, he needs the loo. Oh, that means, oh yeah, he's getting hungry. I know it, but he's sick of being told, and I completely understand it. So, we come to loggerheads because he's done with it. I'm done with it. I'm like, when are you just going to figure this out? He's not going to figure it out. His body just doesn't tick right, you know?
Wow. So I can relate a little bit, not to that extreme, I guess, but my son, especially when he was younger, sleep and food and the meltdowns, 90% of his massive meltdowns always happened within an hour before he needed to eat, before lunch, before dinner, before breakfast. And I would, so many times, I would be like, you please just eat this bite of cracker, just eat this one thing. And if I got him to eat it, which sometimes he refused, but if I could get him to take a bite, he was almost completely fine within seconds of taking a bite of food.
And it's painful because we know it.
Yes. And of course they don't always want to do it. And I tried bringing him food in bed to help him get out of bed. That didn't work after a few days because he didn't want the food. And he's saying, I'm not hungry. And I'm saying, yes, you are. Yes, you are. And I totally get that. And he did the same thing with going to the bathroom when I was trying to potty train. And it was the same thing, holding his pee for 12 hours straight, just because for whatever, I don't know, the struggle for control, and he wouldn't do it. But needing to go to the bathroom, and kids don't know. And so what is that? I mean, your son is 11, so he must be frustrated with. Does he get frustrated with himself that he doesn't know when to do these things?
No, I think he really just gets annoyed with us,
Yeah.
just us. But I mean, and the thing is, our insight gets validated over and over again. So, you know, he'll get this tone of voice that we know he gets very loud, a certain type of loud. And eventually we've had enough, you know, just the sounds like, oh my God, will you just go to the toilet? And occasionally we've sort of gently coerced him into the room because I'm like, you know, just come out when you're done. And then through the door, you'll hear this river come out of him. And like, you can get your stopwatch out, it's still going. And I'm like, how can you not feel that? How? And it blows my mind that your body cannot feel it. And I've always likened it a little bit to imagine someone's just tapping you on the shoulder all the time. And you don't know what they want. And you're like, yeah, well, whatever. But you don't know what it is. And it's tapping and you're getting escalated and you're getting annoyed, but you don't know why. And it's just tapping, 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 tapping. You're going crazy. You're like, stop tapping. And this is where the outbursts and the meltdowns come from. Just because you need to pee, you go to loo, the tapping's gone. Peace is restored. Life is good. And the thing is, we know that and we want this moment to come, but he's completely oblivious to it. And even still, so I mean, he does say occasionally now he's hungry. So that's a big new thing. First, he doesn't get that. And the loo, it's the same thing. It's always last minute. He shouts through the house if he's going to the toilet, like he's announcing it. okay, well done. Do you want an Oscar? And then we're all relieved. Oh, in half an hour, the whole house is going to be peaceful again. And that whole episode will be forgotten. The thing that you probably also experience is after this, especially this food one, right? So they have their three mouthfuls of whatever you give them, whatever you can manage. And then peace is restored. And it's like a switch. There's a blank slate. And they don't even know they were having a meltdown. Then they just start chatting. Oh, so mom, tomorrow, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, were you here 5 minutes ago when you were throwing things and spitting and hitting and slamming doors and kicking things? Hello, are you this? What did you do with my son? Who are you? And it's weird. And so we're, you know, what's the word I'm after here? We're tense from the situation that happened before. And we're still trying to grapple with what just happened, especially if it's, you know, with physical violence and, you know, threats and whatever. But they're completely oblivious to it. So then we have to hit some kind of reset, which is really hard sometimes because I'm like, well, look, I'm still just a person and I'm still just upset that you hit me. And I can actually still feel where you hit me. And I'm really impressed about it. But I'm very glad that you ate. I'm very glad that you're in a good mood. And I'm just going to try and forget that now. And this is like, you know, 10 times a day sometimes.
Yeah. This is super relatable. And actually, the more you talk about not being able to recognize when he has to drink or eat, I guess my son still does do it. I still say, even a year ago, I was saying, you need to go to the bathroom at least 3 times a day when you wake up, before you go to bed, and at least, and I don't have to go. I don't care. You're going to like give yourself a, I don't know, an infection or something. You need to go. And the same with thirst. And I'll say, you know, take a drink. The other two kids drink a ton of water, but this one doesn't. And finally, at some point during the day, it hits him. Oh, I'm so thirsty. And he just chugs this whole glass and then gets a stomach ache, you know.
And it's right before bed, of course, because that's the best time
Of
to do that.
course, every time. And but what you just said just now is also very relatable. And I think all moms of neurodivergent kids can relate to this. And that is that feeling where your child has been able to move on very quickly. They have my son, same. He does not remember what just happened. He doesn't, it's like he
Out
went
of body
into
experience, right?
out of body experience, total zombie, no clue what happened. And I need time to recover. First of all, like physically, if there's violence involved, but emotionally, how sad I am and angry and grieving. And my kid's like, "Hey, want to play a game? Let's go outside. Let's go." I'm like, "Are you kidding me?" Yes, I know
Like,
exactly
give
that
me a
feeling.
minute here. Let me
Yes.
unclench my jaw for a start. Like, did that just happen?
Yes, exactly right. That is so relatable. Ugh.
And it's constant, right? I
Yeah.
mean, and the other thing I find is it's very hard to have moments where you're relaxed. If they're nice and everything's calm and peaceful, even then you're not relaxed. You're just waiting for the next episode of whatever to
Yes.
come.
Yes.
And the eye before the storm, I mean, it can happen within a minute.
Yes.
Everything's nice and then boom, it's over. So
Yes.
even in those moments where you should be able to relax and enjoy some downtime, I don't think any of us are relaxed ever.
No.
I think we wake
No.
up with a base tension that is already higher than most people have at the peak of their day. And that's where we start.
I completely agree. I once had I was in therapy myself for a little while. Probably 2 years. And she once told me to, she said, you've got to catch your son before it escalates. And I was like,
We try.
I can't catch him. She's like, but you got to pay close attention. As soon as he starts fussing, I'm like, so I'm trying to catch him. And it is 0 to 60 in a second. And it's so
There's no
frustrating.
catching it. And even if you can catch it, you can't always action what you need to. So you go, oh, I see it coming. I see it coming. Quick, get him a cracker.
Yeah.
He might not take the cracker. Or
Right.
maybe you don't get the cracker there fast enough. Cracker to the rescue. Maybe, I don't know, the cracker's broken, then poof, it's
Oh my gosh. Yes. Yes. Oh, if the bread was not even, if I made a sandwich, the two pieces of bread had to line up perfectly. If the sandwich cracker was broken, if the ice cream melts, oh, that was a huge one, the melting ice cream. And even now to this day, he's better with melting ice cream, but I'm still anxious from years of
Our saved
all
trauma.
trauma.
But like,
Yeah.
oh, ice cream equals potential for a very bad day.
Yes.
So
And
the
so
ice
I'm
cream,
still
you're ready
like
for it.
watching him, you know, he wants a cone. I'm like, I don't think we should get a cone. It's gonna drip. And I'm the crazy one right now because I don't want to go through this again. We've done it too many times and it's been traumatic. And
You'd rather just avoid it, right?
yes.
The same with outings and stuff. You think, oh, we can have a nice outing. No. So we're just going to avoid that. We just don't go anywhere. That's
No.
easy. Done, finished. Yeah, it's hard because all these things, I mean, we save them in our minds and we see the potential for danger in everything. Like, don't cut the bread. I'm like, are you sure? Are you sure I can cut it? Are you sure this way? And you're lining up the knife. Are you sure now? Because once it's cut, it's done. Okay, you cut it and then, poof, it can still go. But we live in this chronic tension level that is not healthy. But we can't do anything about it because we know what potential the day has for
Yes.
drama. We'd all rather avoid it. We know it's not in our hands, so we just prepare as best we can for it by being highly strung, going
Yes.
to therapy. And it's funny, actually, my therapist has said, I mean, like I said, for 6 years, not constantly. We have peaks and flows. When I'm having a bad period, we up our appointments. When everything's good, we reduce them. And she's always said, oh, go for walks and make time for yourself. Yeah, ha ha. Ha ha, when and how? And then at some point it was like, I'm too scared to leave the house with my husband because I don't think he's going to cope quite as well as I am. And well, what if I'm not there and everyone needs me? And I'm on panic alert and he might not be. And then what happens if, and I didn't feel like I could, there's a word I want for that too. I couldn't consciously, in good conscience, I couldn't leave the house and just let it be. Even if it would do me good, And I could go for the half hour and I'd come back or recharge. I'd probably come back to mayhem. Not worth it, you know? And the idea of having a babysitter, oh my gosh, I couldn't do that to someone else. No. I mean, we don't cope with our kids. How's anyone else going to cope with them? No. And so you take on all this responsibility because you feel like you're also the only one who knows it. You know those triggers with the ice cream. You know the tone that says go to the toilet. You know your kid better than anyone else. And it's very hard. And it's not just a control freak thing. It's a you're scared of the consequences if you hand that package over to someone who's not prepared for that package. So the whole me time thing, no, that's not happening. Not yet. Not until I can, in good conscience, leave the house and say, nothing's going to be set on fire. It'll be fine.
Very relatable. And even if when that day does come and you can go take a walk for a half hour, you have to somehow train your brain to shut off and not think about what's going on at home. And did your husband remember if that your kid today, he whatever it is, like today he's really focused on this one book, so make sure that he has this book around. And if the bookmark falls out, forget about it because he's going to forget his page and all of these things. And you can't turn it off. You can never shut it off. And so the idea of quote unquote self-care almost becomes it patronizing, like an insult, because
If it was
if
that easy, I'd be doing it.
exactly, that's what I was just going to say.
Sorry,
If it
took your
was that
words.
easy, we'd be doing it. That's it.
Exactly. And I've got to say, I know that you said you weren't going back to teaching because, you know, it's a lot and you're much more into this. And honestly, this is absolutely your thing. So I support you completely in your movement. But I also don't work. Okay, there are also some practical issues living in Germany. Anything you've done before doesn't count. You don't have the language, you don't have qualifications that count here, etc. But at the end of the day, I am so exhausted from my two and all, and as we said, doing it all alone. There is no one to give my kids to even for 10 minutes. It's just one more thing. And then so my youngest, he's got massive trouble going to school. He's just in the first grade now. And school starts here at 8. And the other day I dropped him at 10 to 9 because he just wouldn't move. He gets anxious, and as soon as he knows he's late, it actually has the opposite effect. And then he's more late because he doesn't want to be late. And he stands, you know, you're nodding. He stands in his own way the whole way, you know, and it's like, oh, honestly, kid, just move, but
Yes.
just, you know, just doesn't happen. And then you know, you've got all this societal pressure, oh, you should work. I'm like, yeah, but how? And then my shrink said to me, you know what though, you need those 4 hours. School is only 4 hours here, by the way, 8 till 12. It's very short. Sometimes 8 till 1, unless you've got aftercare, it's very short. I said, like, you're shocked. But I need those 4 hours to brace myself for the afternoon, you know, and I'm just doing housework and all sorts of, or making appointments, getting a prescription, getting a report to send to this, you know, to get your school aid. There's all that paperworky stuff to do. But I'm like, I'm fried. And I mean, how can I disappoint an employer? Because, sorry, my kid wouldn't move to this morning. They had a panic attack about going to school. I can't get to work on time. Sorry, can't go today. We've got a psychiatrist appointment. Sorry, can't go today because, you know, no. And it is taxing having these kids. And I mean, sometimes I think working would be liberating. Go to work, one task, finish it, come home. A little life outside this neurodivergent bubble that we live in. And the other part of me just says, you know what? I just, nah. I've got enough burden at the minute. So there'll be a day for that, but it's not now.
Relatable. I know so many moms who feel the exact same way, and even if they wanted to go and do some go live another life, go work, it's not, it's just not feasible. It's just not. And the morning getting ready for school, oh my gosh, that is still my two out of three of my children, both of them still do the same thing, especially my son. He does panic when he What time is it? What time is it? And I don't want to tell him. I don't want to tell him what time it is. And if he figures out, he looks at the clock, whatever. Oh my gosh, we're late. We're late. Oh my gosh. And now forget it. He can't even move. He's frozen in time. And I say, we're not that late. Like, we're fine. You just need to move your body. Are we rushing? Are we rushing? No. Yes. Yes, we are. But no. I just come with me. Let's go get your shoes. But I can't be late. Ah. And it just blows up to be this whole thing. Oh my goodness.
Yeah, flight, fright, and freeze. Yeah, the freeze
Yeah.
is a problem. Yeah, and then now, okay, my eldest, he'll go mental at the little one because the little one's making the big one late. And it's just, is this really happening every morning? Yeah, morning and bedtime, they're my two most hated times of day. And so actually I was thinking about this morning. People say, oh, you just need routine. You need to be consistent. You need to be strict. You need to, yeah, ha ha. Come and live with us for a week and see that it's just not possible. You've got years and years of bedtimes and you want that to run a certain way. And I mean, I've got printed checklists around our house with pictures for the morning and pictures for bedtime. It doesn't matter. They don't care about the checklist. I care about the checklist, but they don't. No one's looking at it. And even if they do look at it, they're not going to do it. ADHD rule 101, whatever's meant to be done, no, there's something more interesting, So, oh, look over there. Doesn't matter what it is. Oh, a butterfly, and everything's out the window. And depending where they, I always say, the moods are a little bit like a roller coaster. They go up and down and up and down. It depends where you are. And bedtime might run very differently when the roller coaster is at the bottom, but when it's up doing a loop, you can forget just cleaning your teeth. You can forget, let's get in pajamas. You can forget all of it. Would you like a book and a cuddle? Wouldn't that be sweet? No, there's door slamming, there's throwing things, there's screaming in faces. Yeah, not cool. And then so at the moment, I sort of said, look, guys, at bedtime, I just want to make sure that you're not in the same room at the same time. So it's a root, and it's funny. I said years ago, okay, if you hear the word, and I make this up, if you hear wallabaloo, you want to exit the room and you don't come back in. It's a rule. Wallabaloo is like a door portal ceiling thing, like a magic Q word. And it's funny because the kids sometimes do it when they don't want the other sibling in their room. They go, wallabaloo, wallabaloo. It's a rule. Like bedtime, you just cannot be in the same room with the other one. It does not work. Having said that, when you're one parent doing bedtime, you can't necessarily keep them away from each other. Well, they think, oh, wouldn't it just be a great idea to go in there and jump on the bed of my brother? No, it's not a great idea. But at that moment, ADHD brain thinks it's a fantastic idea. And you don't have a chance.
Oh my gosh. Both of my sons have ADHD. My husband does. And I'm starting to think my daughter might as well. So we are definitely an ADHD home. And that is how our bedtimes go every single day. Every day.
You
And the
don't get
same,
used to it.
oh, and it, I hate it. Same mornings and bedtime are the worst. And bedtime, that's exactly what happens. My boys keep finding each other and I keep separating them and then they find each other and they are either fighting, rolling around and fighting or they're laughing and being just ridiculous and inappropriate and running around and chasing the cat. It's mayhem. And my children's doctor recently, even though he knows me, whatever, it's fine. But a few months, maybe a month ago, he said to me, well, just make sure that you structure and routine, it should be. And I was like, are you kidding me? I have been a teacher for 15 years. I know structure and routine. They need it. It's not working though. Like I can't.
No, it doesn't. Although I said to them just yesterday, I'm like, you know what? You don't play up at school. Explain that. I mean, I know why, but I just thought, can't you just sometimes hold it together here too? Please just fake
Yes.
it just for one
Yes.
day. Wouldn't it be nice if bedtime just went smoothly? And
Yeah.
like sitting down for a book, one loves books and the other one's like, oh yeah, no, you read a book and I'll just go over here and play. But I'm like, no, that's not how book time works. So in fact, with my second, we hardly ever read a book because he can't sit still for, or he couldn't. He probably could now. Couldn't sit still for a book. I'm like, all right, because we thought that would wind them down. No, if the story is too exciting, that also will backfire. Sorry, doesn't work for everyone. So yeah, all these lovely recommendations for routine and structure, you can keep them. We don't need them. We
Correct.
try.
Correct. And it's and for some moms, and I don't know about you, but at all these suggestions that people have made over the years, and you try and you try and you try, and none of them work. Eventually, especially when you feel alone, at least for me, I got to a point where I said, okay, all these professionals are telling me what to do, and I am trying and nothing's working. So what is wrong with me?
Yeah,
I'm clearly doing something
definitely.
wrong. I'm trying everything they're saying, but they're saying this is supposed to help and work and it's not. And
No, because, oh, sorry, go on.
no, I was just gonna, and you beat yourself up for it.
But I think sometimes also these are just external viewpoints and not people who've lived it. Like you can have someone who's been a neurologist for 30 years, they might not have it in their home. And it's a completely different ballpark. Your teacher might have really good suggestions and they've got some in their class, but you don't have them all day, every day. On weekends and holidays, you don't see the full spectrum of the possibilities in a day. You only see them for the tiny bit they're at school where they're holding it together. So all these bits of advice that people throw at you aren't necessarily coming from that knowledgeable position, which is what's so great about your page. Everyone there who throws advice, you, that's actually valid advice. And that's probably the advice you're going to at least have a go at. Just because, okay, well, you at least get it. So if it works for you, it might work for me. But no, all these lovely, helpful, friendly, helpful, bleh, I can't speak anymore. All these helpful suggestions, sometimes just like, oh, I'll think about that. It was like my perfect line, just, oh, I'll think about that. I'll think about that. I'm just going to put that in a box and I'm going to put it in a drawer and I'm never going to look at it again. But thank you. I'll think about that. Kind of like on autoplay.
Yeah, you're
Yeah.
very funny.
Thank you. I try. Like I said, laugh or cry.
Yes,
And
and
don't we
now
laugh?
please tell, you must tell us about the books.
Right. So I will tell you my bumbles. I've forgotten about them. Yeah. So I've been a storyteller for my kids for years. Like I said, sitting with books never really worked. So what I would do is they shared a double bed actually for quite a while. And I would lie in between and I'd lie there until they were asleep. But in the meantime, I would tell them a story. I'd make up stories. Some of them were good, some of them were pretty dodgy. But anyway. I decided I should probably write down a few of them. And then one night I was so tired. Oh, mummy, another story. Mummy, another story. And I said, oh, I'm too tired. You know, I'll write you one on paper and I'll read it to you at breakfast. So I did that. And I read it to them at breakfast. They're like, eh, I'm like, yeah, good on you. Okay, get to school. So anyway, that was the start. And I thought, you know what? I am actually pretty good at this writing story thing. And then I think this was actually when COVID was around. I sort of, I don't know, at the end of the day, we're all fried. We've spent too much time together. I would sit down and actually write a few. And so I wrote one about an anxious snail called the snail who lost his slime. This was my kid's idea, actually. This was the story that I said, I'll write to you overnight. And then I didn't really have a plan. I just sat down with the snail who lost its slime as a heading, and then it came out of me. And in the end, the snail is anxious. And then I realized, actually, in thinking about this, I'm probably the snail. Where you know you get stuck and you don't really know what to do. You have to kind of just deal with what you've got, which we all do as parents of neurodivergent kids. So then I wrote the snail book. And then I contacted a friend of mine in Australia. She's an illustrator, she's also an author. And I said, oh, you know, Betty, would you mind doing some pictures for me? I'd like to print this up for the kids. She said, oh my God, I love it. I said, all right. And then she said, you know, there was a character in that book called with a worm. You should write a book about him. I said, yeah, you know what? I will. So then the kids went to bed at night. I wrote another one. I sent it to her. She said, yes. Oh, this is just as good, better than the last. But you know, there was a spider in that story. Write a spider one. Okay, so I did. And then the spider one happened to be an artist who was bullied because the webs aren't quite right. But having said that, not right, not normal, that's social norm. But the webs are beautiful in their own right. So this is about bullying and acceptance. In the end, it's become a whole series. So I've got a snail who's anxious. I've got a bee who has ADHD or autism or SPD. He's a bit chaotic, makes the hive fall down. Then I've got the spider who was bullied because he was an artist and doesn't fit in the box. Of course, in the end, it all works out great. I've got a ladybug who needs physical affection because, you know, sometimes your kids, also when they're melting down, they're going crazy, they just need a hug. And then I realized this at some point, and as much as it goes against my natural desire to leave the situation. I'm like, you know, if I just give him a hug, it might diffuse it. And so often it does. So I've got a book called The Ladybug Needed a Hug. I've got confused. I've got so many books. Anyway, and I've got a seventh one coming out about a butterfly with physical difference. Because of course, kids who have physical difference or mobility issues are also singled out, you know, so they might not be neurodivergent, but they're also out of the box, you know, not the norm. So yeah, so this was a little bit of a coping strategy, I guess I had at the time. Then, you know, I had in my mind, you know, my youngest is the spider, he's the artsy one, and my eldest, he's the bee, you know, he's the ADHD chaos kid. And yeah, it all sort of flowed from there. So that's definitely been my thing, and I found writing to really be my outlet. I've got another book I've written for my son's birthday next month, and it's my escape. So when we talked about doing things for yourself, I've now decided this is my thing. For myself. So even though it kind of it goes along the lines of parenting neurodivergent kids, and I really believe in the series, it's a way of kids being able to identify with the characters. Oh, that's a bit like me. And then actually the best feedback I ever had, the ADHD book, another mother, she has twins, same as you, and one of them has ADHD. And she said the ADHD kid didn't understand it, but the 5-year-old sibling said, Ah, oh, I get it. I get it. And of course, all the books are about, at the end of the day, love and acceptance, and you are how you are and you belong anyway.
Oh my
So,
gosh, that's so cool.
yeah,
Are
thanks.
they available for purchase?
They are. They're all on Amazon because, of course, being in Germany, I can't sell them anywhere here. Kids this age don't read English. So Amazon is the portal of choice. So yeah, no, they're all available on Amazon for anyone who's interested.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Okay, so I will have to link to them in the show notes.
Thank
Did you
you.
self-publish or do you have a
I
company
did.
you
No,
self-publish?
I did it myself for numerous reasons, but the main one being the logistics of me being here. Yeah, and then don't have to worry about tax and all this stuff and
Oh
inter
my
country
gosh.
stuff.
That is so
Yeah.
cool. So cool. I
Thanks.
want to write a book someday. That's so cool.
Well, they say there's a book in everyone, so, and there's no deadline on it. There's still time.
That's true. This has been amazing. You are amazing.
Thank
I
you.
am so glad that we've connected.
Me
Do
too.
you have any sort of last quick piece of advice or words of encouragement for a mom who might be listening, who might feel alone, who might be in a country that there's not a lot of support, who can relate to you?
Oof, that's a big ask.
I know.
Well, in the words of the famous Dory, just keep swimming. That's my best quote because look, it's a job we can't quit. We've got no choice about it. We have to shrug off all that negativity that everyone throws our way, understand that we won't do it perfectly. No one's perfect. Our kids aren't perfect. We're not perfect. And the only choice we've got is to try our best, try everything we can, and just keep swimming.
Well said.
Yeah.
Chantal, this has been so good. I loved it. Thank you so
Me
much.
too. Thank you so much for having me. I've had a great time.
Oh, me too.
Thanks for listening today. If you're not already subscribed to this podcast, please do so so that you get the latest when they roll out. Not to mention, please leave a review if you feel like this episode spoke to you. That way, the podcast will be shown to more mothers. And finally, you can find me on Instagram at On the Hard Days with dots in between each word, or in my free Facebook community, On the Hard Days Podcast and Community. If you are feeling isolated in your parenting journey, I encourage you to reach out through any of these means so that I can connect you with your people and support you in whatever way you need.